Thank you everybody for joining today. Just getting set up here. And we will begin momentarily. I'm sorry, I'm just looking for one more little thing here. Where did that go now? There it is. Okay. All right, I found it. I'm sorry for our little late beginning. You know, if I had an extra half hour, I still wouldn't be ready. One of my big regrets is that every time I think I kind of figured stuff out, I realize that if only I had one more hour, you would get a much, much better class. But then again, if I wouldn't have the pressure, and I wouldn't have to be here at a semi-quasi-time, I don't know if you'd get a class at all. At any rate, may Hashem forgive me for the shortcomings, and I'm going to do the best I can to give you a glimpse into the glorious words of David HaMelech, words that rang true in antiquity, words that rang true across the millennia, centuries of history, and words that perhaps ring true in today's day and age more than ever before. Not only do Torah truisms still have value, not only do they continue to resonate with meaning, but in fact, oftentimes, my experience has been that the words of Torah resonate with greater clarity and even more meaning in our day and age. Of course, we have the benefit of all that has transpired over the centuries. And all of that contributes to our view of reality and our appreciation of what's unfolding around us. For history continues to repeat itself, but never quite precisely. So we can still make mistakes. I don't mean to speak in riddles. But I do want to tell you that I'm very excited about today's class. I'm excited because this was a hard class to prepare. And I really didn't understand the words of David HaMelech. It was almost painful. And I think that through repetitive study and looking at this yet again and then yet again, suddenly it started to come together. Today's class will marshal some erudition and depth. I know people kvetch and complain my classes are too sophisticated and I should give things that are more, you know, cash and carry, easy to assimilate into your daily life. Okay, so let's make a compromise. I'm still going to try to teach you things of depth and profundity, but I'm going to work really hard at applying this to your everyday life and my everyday life as we seek to contend with an ever-changing, yet perhaps never-changing world around us. And as we seek to better ourselves, we should try to better ourselves. We're very good at noticing what everybody else does wrong. But when you point a finger at somebody else, as one wise person once observed, there are four fingers pointing back at you. So, with no further ado, we are in the midst of some awesome ascendancy. Studying Shir HaMalot. We're still in the first chapter of the 15 Shtir HaMalot, we had a preamble to the Shtir HaMalot, and then after the preamble that introduced the Shtir HaMalot to us, in our first class, we noted that David begins by crying out to Hashem in distress, and God answers. Now, he didn't talk about what that distress is. So, before we begin, let me ask you a funny question, if I may. You don't have to answer, but like, just a funny question. Oh, 1 second. I forgot to record. So, as we begin, here is the question, the big question for the day. What do you call distress, or what do you call real problems? I'll give you a multiple choice, okay? One is people who aren't speaking the truth, are saying not nice things. The second is people who are stealing your money. The third is people who are causing you bodily harm, actually harming your family. And the fourth is those who are killing you or killing your loved ones. So on a scale of 1 to 10, what would register as the biggest problem possible? What would be the biggest issue? I'm going to suggest that we'd be wise going backwards here, and it'll get considerably less onerous. The worst of all is getting murdered. That's like the worst. Or, God forbid, death, murder being perpetrated against the nation of Israel. Unfortunately, we know too much of that. So that would be by far the worst. So we're going to choose D. What would be slightly better? Well, slightly better would be losing your valuables or your money, which is not comfortable or nice. Many of the Jews who had to flee before the Nazis, and their many willing executioners, let's not try to gloss over the uncomfortable facts, that enormous amounts of the local populations in Lithuania, in Estonia, in Poland, in Ukraine, yeah, in Russia too. Let's not even go to Transylvania, Hungary, Austria, those nice Germans. They're regular, nice, ordinary citizens who actively contributed towards the murder of the Jewish people. So, some Jewish people had the good fortune of fleeing with the shirts on their back. And they lost everything. But they stayed alive. Now, it wasn't comfortable for these people to arrive on the shores of the United States, and later when Canada decided to be a little less anti-Semitic, in this country too. It wasn't comfortable to come without a penny in your pocket. But it's better than being dead. So some of my ancestors just didn't make it. They ended up shot, starved, burned. Some of them did. I'm here today, thank God. So because they survived but lost all their money, we would say, as the Yiddish phrase goes, a kapara de geld. If there was negativity that had to be directed against us, okay, better to lose money, affluence, wealth, than life or suffer bodily harm. So murder is the worst. Physical torture, maiming, physical harm, lasting harm, better than death, but much worse than losing your money. Losing money, having your property or valuables robbed from you, very uncomfortable. In fact, ani choshev kemes, the Talmud says that a person who is poverty-stricken almost feels dead. All of this is far worse than words that are deceitful, lies, insults, false friendship. And yet, when David HaMelech wants to appeal to Hashem to save him, please, he says, listen to my prayers. He says, Batzoroso, in my distress and my pain, what should God save you from? Should he save you from the murderers? Should he save you from the thieves? Should he save you from those who seek to harm, to maim? No. Hashem, Hatzilo Nafshi, save my soul, Misvas Sheker, from lying lips. Seriously? King David's biggest problem was people who told lies. It's not like the worst distress he could possibly conjecture up in his mind's eye is lying lips. You know, if that's not good enough, just for emphasis, miloshen remia, from a deceitful tongue. So it seems that the word sfat is related to the terminology in Hebrew for sfataim, for lips. And it seems that lashon, which can also mean sometimes a language, is here specifically referring to the tongue. And remia is deceit, and sheker is a lie. So lying lips and a deceitful tongue, it's the biggest problem King David could have imagined. In fact, that's how he begins the Hoshir HaMalot. He says, Batsarasa, in my pain, in my distress, Korosi, I cried out to you. Thank God you answered me. And I said, God, save me from murderers and rapists. Save me from thieves and bandits. Nah, that's nothing. Hatzila menafshi, misfas sheker. Save me from those lying lips. You know, those people who lie to me. It was so bad when they lied to me. Okay, so they lied to you. So they're a liar. So the person's deceitful. Like, what's going on over here? And then King David gets into this whole remonstration. He says, "My yitun lacho, my yesef lach loshen amia. What are your lies, and what is it? What do you profit from all your deceit? Like, who are you talking to? What is the purpose of this argument? Who are you trying to impress?" And then he goes on to speak about how damning and how harmful words are. They're like arrows and they're like flaming coals. Come on. I mean, there are worse things than words. Bad words, deceitful words, lying words, untruth. Worse things. So this was in my head. I'm trying to learn this chapter of Tillim. I can't make sense out of it. It's not resonating. Tillim is supposed to resonate with us. King David, in his prophetic intuition, and in incredible poetic talent, King David was able to distill the most sublime and profound and ordinary feelings into the exquisite prophetic prose of Tehillim. And every one of us is actually supposed to find himself right here in these words. And I don't like people who lie to me. Nobody likes being lied to. Nobody likes deceit, but really, like, is that your biggest problem? That's the tzorosa. That's your pain. That's your distress. This was what bothered me. It should bother you too. I mean, assuming that you actually want to understand the words of Tillim and that the words of Psalms, in your view, should be important to us and should be relevant for us. Should enable us to pray or express ourselves before Hashem, and should serve as inspiration. Where's the inspiration? How do these words talk to us? So let's begin our journey of discovery. And it's really fascinating. It's fascinating. Because the first thing I noticed when my eye fell upon the commentary of Rashi is, despite the fact that sfas sheker literally translates as lying lips, and despite the fact that lashon remia literally means a deceitful tongue, Rashi purposely takes the understanding of this verse away from its literal meaning. Rashi says, Zaroi shel harosho. What King David is seeking relief from is the seed of the wicked. Maybe it could be read as horesha, of the wickedness, the seed of the wickedness. What do the seed of wickedness or the seed of the wicked do? Of course, who is the wicked, but What does the seed do? So Rashi tells us, "Shetzodin es habriot befihem." They ensnare or entrap others, creatures, with their mouths, ba'alilot resha, with wicked libel. In other words, The first thing Rashi tells us is that King David is not asking to be saved from lying lips. King David is asking to be saved from people who have lying lips. But not just any people. He identifies this as the seed of the wicked. The seed of the wicked, and the way to identify who is that seed of the wicked? And perhaps the word seed can have almost a double meaning here. Seed means the progeny, the children, but the seed can also mean that which is planted and then grows. Seeds are very small, but planted in fertile soil, they can grow and multiply in an extraordinary way. One little apple seed can produce millions of apples, tens or hundreds of millions of apple seeds, and in the end, ad infinitum amount of apple trees. So this is the seeds of wickedness. All the wickedness is being traced back to these people who are the seed of wickedness itself. Who are these people? Who's Rashi referring to? So when I read this Rashi, I realized these are not words that are new. These are old words. I remember seeing these words before. These words are found in the book of Genesis. Yes, describing a very wicked man. A wicked man, a wicked man who produces some of the most horrible human beings on the face of earth, including Amalek, a wicked man who sadly was Jewish. His father and mother were very righteous people. His brother and sister-in-laws were extraordinarily righteous people. His nephews were very righteous people. But he became very rotten, wicked, and evil. He was a rapist. He was a murderer. He was a master of deceit. In Hebrew, we call him Esav, Esau. When the Torah talks about Esav or Esau growing up, Genesis 25, verse 28 tells us, verse 27, verse, Vayigdulu hana'arim. The boys grew up. Rashi tells us, Kolzman shayektanim, klini kindalach, small children, layinikorim ha'maseim. You couldn't know who was going to be what. All kids are sweet and innocent. Yeah, a rambunctious kid, a troublemaker kid. Little children are little children. You don't really see the distinction between people when you look at a class of children. Class of children, some of them are brighter, some of them are denser, some of them are more creative, some less, but you know, kids are kids. But when the children start to grow up, then all of a sudden you start to see who they are. Invariably, this happens when people become teenagers. Personality really starts to develop or to become expressed in the teenage years. Rashi says that's true. Ein adu medaktik, he says, when you're looking at small children, they couldn't be identified by virtue of the things they did. What they did was not really reflective. It didn't kind of explain to you or clarify for you who these people actually were. Mativam, what's the nature? But kivan shanasa b'nei shleisha, says Shana, once they turned 13, teenagers. Zeh pirish labatei medrashos. Yaakov kind of separated from his brother. And he went off in the direction of scholarly pursuit. Vezeh pirish l'aveda zara, and the other went off in a very different kind of pursuit of idolatrous worship or self-aggrandizement. One in a direction of humility and subservience to Hashem, and the other in the direction of arrogance and the pursuit of self-gratification and aggrandizement. And very interestingly, after telling us Vayigdulu Hana'orim, the Torah says Vayehi Esav Ish Yodea Tzayed. He's a person who's cunning. He knows how to trap. But Yaakov, he's an Ish Soda Esav. He's a man of the field. He understands the outside world. Yaakov is Ish Tom. He's a simple-hearted, very sincere fellow. Yeshiva Holim shuns the rat race, the outdoors, more focused on being studious and acquiring knowledge. So Yitzchak is impressed with Esav's worldliness. He's impressed with his aggressive nature. He says, this kid has got a future. We just got to direct him properly. Yitzchak wasn't wrong in theory, but in practice, he was totally wrong. Rivka settled for much less. She set her sights on Yaakov. She said, Yaakov, he's like a simple-hearted. He doesn't seem so cunning. He doesn't seem so aggressive. But he has the right value system. He'll learn to be aggressive. He'll learn to deal with the world. Without his mother, he never would have. That's another story. She made this man. She really helps and enables Yaakov to develop. But Yitzchak said, you're working on developing Yaakov. Esav's there already. We just have to reorient him. So Rashi says, what is the meaning of Vayehav Yitzchak as Esav Kitzayid Befiv? Because his trap or his game was in his mouth. So Rashi is Kitargumo, like the Targum renders it. What does the Targum say? He says, Urechem Yitzchak as Esav Arei Mitzayda Hayachil, because he ate of his game. Now, in a literal meaning, this could be that Esav was a provider very early on for his family. He was bringing food home or profit home to take care of his parents. He was a good son, actually. Esav was the one mitzvah he really excelled at was the mitzvah of honoring his parents. And Yitzchak benefited from this. And he was impressed with, you know, Esav's ability. That's the first approach, Rashi says. Ki tzayid, for game, befiv was in the mouth of Yitzchak. Befiv shel Yitzchak. However, Rashi tells us, something doesn't add up. That's all Yitzchak was looking for. To be fed for the day. Yitzchak, after all, wants to raise a Jewish nation. So therefore, Rashi feels compelled to share with you Umedrasho. The Medrash says, befiv shel Esav. He was, so to speak, game in the mouth of Esav. Hayotzadoi say he was game. He was Esav's game. Esav played him. Umiramehu b'dvar of Esav fooled him. And the Medrash goes on to explain how Esav would ask all kinds of sophisticated halacha questions, pretending as if he was really a very righteous and generous and upright individual. And Yitzchak fell for it. He wanted to believe that Esav was good, but Esav was good at his game. So there's a movie that was released about a half a year ago or so about social media. It's called The Social Dilemma. And I was very taken by it because it's pretty scary stuff. Of course, it scares people a little while and they just go back to their old ways and here we are back. We're back on Facebook. I never went off, but here's the thing. People believe that Facebook or social media, Twitter, is here to serve them. And this movie says, yeah, that's right. It's to serve you as lunch. Not to serve you lunch, but to serve you as lunch. That you're basically being had. You're basically being served. Not as in you're being taken care of, but as you're being provided to somebody else. That you are fair game for the advertisers, that they know exactly what you're looking for, and that you are right between the crosshairs of mind control. A scary thought. So, I mean, that's a choice we have to make, though. We don't have to be game. We can have game. We can use social media. I think I'm using social media in a positive way. If you're joining me now, we're using this medium to teach words of Torah and eternal inspiration. That's a good thing. It's not good, though, if you're glued to your iPhone or your screen and you can't let go of it and they keep pulling you in, finding what interests you sending you articles and making sure you see the things that you want to see that make you feel good, so giving you temporary releases of serotonin or dopamine, and essentially hooking you, addicting you, and then feeding you to the advertisers. After they've mapped out all of your habits and know everything about you. I'm talking to you about this because it serves, no pun intended, to explain this Rashi. Yitzchak loves Esav because Esav's game is befiv in his mouth, meaning he benefits from Esav. He's being served by Esav. Or, Rashi says, if you want to read that verse a little more subtly, Yitzchak is game for Esav's mouth. He's being taken by. He's being served, so to speak. He is the game. Esav's got very good game. And Yitzchak is the victim, not the beneficiary. There's a silly joke they tell about a fellow who walks out of a Starbucks, you know, before the days of COVID, and you could just go and buy a coffee somewhere. And he sees a guy sitting, he's sitting there at a patch of flowers, and he's got a fishing rod. And he figures, wow, this is sad. And he says to this fellow, you okay? And the guy says, yeah, I'm doing fine. What are you doing? He says, I'm fishing. You're fishing? He says, yeah, I'm fishing. Is it in a bed of flowers? Yeah, he says, I'm fishing. I'm fishing. He says, wow, that's sad. Have you eaten anything yet today? Yeah. And the guy says, no, but I'm fishing. And he says, why don't you come inside, let me buy you a coffee. And so the man rolls up his fishing rod, and as they're walking into the Starbucks, he turns around to him and he says, so, did you catch any fish today? And the man responds, yep, you're the seventh. You see what I mean? So Yitzchak's being taken or played by Esav. Okay, so that is the kind of the background. Isn't it amazing that Rashi uses these exact words? And then I see that when we refer to Harosha, the wicked, Esav is the man. He represents the idea of wickedness. Now, I know that you may be thinking, that's not fair. It's like Esav was almost like born as the fall guy. Rivka was pregnant. She has these two urges within her. She doesn't know what's going on. She gets a sonogram of antiquity with a prophet, and he says to her, no worries. It's not a person with two different personalities. It's not a split personality. No, it's two babies you got there. One gets excited from the houses of Torah. One gets excited from idolatry. You say, yeah, that's not fair. I mean, like, poor Esav. He was born to be wicked, and then he's blamed for being wicked. No, my friends, doesn't work like that. As I've shared with you in many a previous class on this very subject, Esav had more potential than Yaakov. In fact, the Zohar waxes on about Esav's extraordinary potential and that Yitzchak saw and appreciated that potential. So what went wrong? Esav went wrong. Yitzchak can't make these decisions for Esav. Rivka gave up on him. She was just way smarter. She said, I got this kid figured out. I watched him grow up. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. Unfortunately, Rivka is right. It's the Jewish matriarch or the Jewish mother who sets the agenda, the tone, and the future in motion. It's Rivka who ensures that Yaakov gets those foundational blessings so that he can go on to become the Yaakov Avinu who fathers the Jewish people. Yitzchak would have squandered, it seems, those blessings on Esav. And of course, as soon as Isaac or Yitzchak realizes that Jacob actually is capable of thinking outside the box and putting on somebody else's clothes and doing what it takes to survive, he said, oh, so I misdiagnosed him all along. Gam Baruch Yehiyah, maybe may he indeed be blessed. And at that point, Yitzchak immediately gives up. He knows that it's too late. It's never going to work with Esav either. But in the beginning, Esav has his father fooled entirely. And he's able to do some terrible things and get away with it because he's a master of deception. The master of deception. He's a murderer commits his first homicide at age 15. He's a thief, a thug, he's a rapist, and a womanizer, a seducer. He's a horrible guy. It's like, you can like check every single one of the ills that we rail against in society. He epitomized the worst of the worst. He makes that guy, Jerry Epstein or Weinstein, he makes them look like child's play compared to what he did. Ravishing minors and majors, you name it, Esau did it. But here's the big question. How did he do it? What was his single most powerful enabling quality? And the answer is deception. He could perpetrate the crimes, he could carry out the acts because he fooled and lied people because he was wearing camouflage. He never exposed himself as a target. He ever concealed and played the chameleon. Ever camouflaged. And as such, his victims were ever unsuspecting. With his lies and with his deceit, Yaakov suffers terribly all through his childhood, adolescence, and adulthood. In fact, straight till his last day. That, of course, is the subject of many a lecture, the relationship between Yaakov and Esau, but it doesn't stop with Yaakov and Esau. Yaakov and Esau become the blueprint for the future of the Jewish people and their enemies. Jacob, Yaakov, is identified as the patriarch of Israel. We are Beit Yisrael, Am Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael, Bnei Yaakov. And Esau sona li Yaakov, and Esau represents ultimately the enemies of the Jewish people. And they are many. They come in many forms, in many sizes, in many shapes, in many colors, in many ethnicities. But they are commonly seen as the illegitimate offspring of Esau. Now let's go back to what Rashi says. Who is David HaMelech worried about? Who does he fear most? He doesn't fear the enemy that he can easily identify. He doesn't fear the enemy who stands up and says, I hate you, I want to kill you, because David is a mighty and fearless warrior. We, the Jewish people, can defend ourselves when we're dealt with openly and honestly. But when you're roped into a web of deceit, when it's all lies and libel, here we start to have tremendous issues and challenges and problems. Oh, by the way, just to prove to you that my hunch is right here about Esau, David HaMelech goes on to speak about, you know, he kind of lectures the liars. What are you doing this for? What's the point? And then he metaphorizes and he says, it's like sharp arrows and flaming coals. So the Medrash Shochar Tov, Medrash Tilim, which we're going to come back to as we continue to study this psalm, towards the end of its fourth entry on the 120th psalm, he says like this, he says, these are not just the words of David HaMelech. Moses echoes these words generations before David HaMelech. Six generations earlier, Moses, who is the author of numerous chapters of the book we call Tehillim, in fact, 10 of the chapters have authorship attributed to Moses, to Moshe Rabbeinu. Usually they begin with the words Tfilah the Moshe, a prayer for Moses, as in Psalm 90 or Psalm 91, Yoshev B'Seter. So over there in Yoshev B'Seter, which is one of the Psalms authored by Moshe Rabbeinu, later redacted and tightened and sewn together into the book of Tehillim, which is David HaMelech's book, but parts of Tehillim are David's original prophetic compositions, and much of Tehillim was written by others. So Moshe Rabbeinu, six generations earlier, in the fifth verse of Psalm 91, says, mipachad loilo. Lo tira mipachad loilo. Do not be fearful of the night, or the fear, the dread of the night. Night is a metaphor for the darkest and most difficult times in our exilic odyssey. By means of example, Elie Wiesel's first Holocaust memoir is entitled Night. Moshe said to the Jewish people, Lo tira, do not fear. Do not become paralyzed by fear. Fear is a very powerful emotion. It's the most powerful emotion. It's how tyrannical regimes control populations. Fear. Moshe said, don't be fearful. This is a message he repeats time and again in the book of Deuteronomy. So Moshe said, Lo tira mipachad loila, mipachdom, from the fear of Malchut Esav. The Medrash Tilim links the arrows, the sharp arrows, with the arrows that Moshe Rabbeinu speaks of in Yoshev Beseter, in Psalm 91. And he says, this is the meaning of night or fear, Malchut Esav, the dominion of Esau, the dominion of Esau, the children of Esau. He says, Mechetz Ya'uf Yomam, from the arrow that flies in broad daylight. What's the arrow that flies in broad daylight? This is going to amaze you. This is written like 18 centuries ago. Min lavladin shalahem, from their writers. The arrows aimed against the Jewish people are their writers. Think of protocols of the elders of Zion, the Tsarist forgery that sowed so much anti-Semitism. Think of Hitler, Yimach Shemo's Mein Kampf. Think of modern-day leftist media that demonizes Israel endlessly. Somebody sent a tweet I saw today. It said, 0.1 of fatalities caused because of war or conflict are linked to Israel. 0.1. And yet, 99% of leftist human rights attacks are directed against Israel. Never mind the Muslim minorities who are persecuted in China. Never mind the Christian minorities persecuted in countries like Iran or Lebanon. Never mind the Tibetans. I mean, never mind the Yazidis. Israel, that's the problem. Mechetz Ya'uf Yomam, from the arrows launched in broad daylight from their riders. How compelling is that? How incredible is that? Lakach Nemar, the Medrash Tilim says, that's why here David HaMelech metaphorizes and he says, Chitzei Giber Shenunim, the sharpened arrows of the mighty. Do you understand what David HaMelech was dealing with? He was so insightful. He understood that the root source of all of Israel's suffering would come through libel, would come through forgery, would come through deceit. The blood libels, the poison well libels, the libels that the Jewish people are trying to control the world, to have a cabal of secret industrialists or financiers who are controlling everybody. The libel that the Jewish people are part of a COVID conspiracy. I mean, I could go on. The conspiracy theories are endless, from the far right to the far left. Hatzad hashoveh shebineihem. The common denominator of all of these repugnant, disgusting, sickening individuals is lies, deceit. Everything framed in manners of untruth, of libel. And that's how the worst acts of murder and mayhem were perpetrated against the Jewish people. Because the masses bought, so to speak, the story. They drank the Kool-Aid. Don't you see it? David HaMelech wasn't praying for himself. He was praying for you and me. The Medrash Tilim, the outset of his commentary on Psalm 120, says, Amru Yisrael lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the nation of Israel says before God, Kishem shehit saltonu min hakoil, just as you have saved us from all the other problems we had. You know, the pharaohs, the Nebuchadnezzars, all of the evil Tituses, the anti-Semites over history, the Antiochuses, the Hamans. Kach tatzilenu mizeh, save us from this. V'ein lanu tzara oy, they will have no more problem. Kisfas sheker, hi hatzara. The false accusations, the libels against the Jewish people, that is the source of our problems. How many people believe today that Israel, who is today the Jew amongst the nations, that Israel is the source of conflict, of difficulty and trouble, problems, or worse? How many people are aware of the fact that a vastly disproportionate amount of positivity has emanated from tiny Israel? How many people are aware of the fact that it was the Jewish people's ingenuity and creative genius that has earned them a significant portion of Nobel Prizes for real achievement? I'm not talking about dynamite and gunpowder. I'm talking about things that have changed the face of the world in the most positive of ways. How many people are aware that Israel, tiny, tiny Israel, has done more to help the enormous and oftentimes ignored continent of Africa for the last 50 and 60 years? How many people realize or know that Israel is almost the first amongst responders when the natural disaster hits anywhere in the world? I could go on. You know the truth. The libel and the lies, the blood libels that we put blood on our matzah, the bubonic plague libels that we poison the wells, the lies being perpetrated today that Jewish people, sinister Jewish people, are the super spreaders of COVID around the world today, have actually resulted in murder and mayhem. Actual attacks on visible Jews throughout this continent. This is not a joke. My friends, these lies kill. King David saw that. Listen to the way the Ibn Ezra puts it. He says, Me'ish sfas sheker. It's a person. It doesn't even have to be a global plot. A person who chooses lies and deceit against the Jewish people. The result of that is, says the Ibn Ezra, Dima hadvarim David hamelech, David metaphorizes with these words as chitzim shenunim, as sharp arrows, kein yamutu. That's how lethal they are. These lies, these words, this libel is lethal. And it has been, tragically, over the ages. The Ibn Ezra goes on, and we'll come back to this soon when we get to the flying arrows and flaming coals. He says, Ad sheyesh mehem shudivrei k'zovim alav, we have those who spoke words of falsity against David and against the Jewish people. V'yal sheinuhu, and they slander him and us. Kidei sheyareg, to bring about murder. Protocols of the Elders of Zion largely leads to Mein Kampf, which leads to the Holocaust. The lies told by Joseph Goebbels, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, who said, if you tell a lie often enough, it will be believed. It was with those lies that the USSR, the Soviet Union, persecuted religious people, especially Jewish religious people, with a zeal that was unmatched at the time. As one famous Russian dissident said in the 60s, they are lying, we know they're lying, they know we know they're lying, and they're still lying. What was the organ of the Communist Party? Pravda. The truth. Of course, nothing could be further from the truth. What a mockery of the truth when you call the lies the truth. Think about the time in which we live. Think about the people who claim to be speaking the truth. Libel after libel after libel. The anti-Semitic left-leaning media fits the bill perfectly, like a glove. Let's go back to this verse now. Hashem Hatzilo Nafshi, God, David HaMelech says, save my soul, Misfas Sheker, from these lying lips for the people who deal in lies. Milashon Remia. The Mitzudas David, giving us Pshat, says the same thing. Ata Hashem, he says. Ata now, Hatzila Nafshi Me'anshei Sfas Sheker. It's not lies. It's the people who use those lies so deviously and so devastatingly. It's Anshei, the people. The subject here is not the lies and the deceit. It's the people who use the mechanism of lies and deceit. So how do you respond to this? How do you respond to those lies and to deceit? You know, Rabbeinu Yosef Chiyun, the Rebbe of the Abarbanel, as he's cited by the Imam Loy, says, Mevakesh here, David HaMelech beseeches, pleads with Hashem. I think he's echoing the Medrash Tilim here. B'shem b'nei ha-gola, in the name of the Jewish exiles. That's us. He says, Hashem Atzilu Nafshi Misfas Sheker, God, save me from lying lips, means Me'anshei Sfas Sheker, from people. Me'anshei Lashon Remia, people of deceit. And he cites the Mizmor Lesoda, who says, what's the meaning of these two expressions, the lying lips and the tongue of deceit? He says, Echad Medaber Dvarim Hamishtamim L'shtei Pamim. Very often these lies are not explicit lies, but they're suggestive lies. It's placed, it's framed a certain way. You know, those cleverly engineered interviews where they gently lob the answer into the mouth of the unsuspecting responder, or even worse, will ask a question and then later ask a different question, and then they'll simply edit the questions and answers, which present it in a totally different fashion. It just happened. The Kavanos Eira, the intent, is entirely wicked. And then he says, worse is the tongue of deceit. Midaber dvarim tovim lefonim. On a face value, seems to be your friend. Ubelibo, but in his heart, Chishev Ra'o, he thinks of evil and plots against you. The first, that's the sheker. That's the lips, the lying lips. The second, he says, is the tongue of deceit. Amloy cites Rabbeinu Yosef Chiyun, he says, this is the meaning in the Hallel prayer in Psalm 118, where it says, "Hashem li be'oizroi v'ani ere b'soni." God will be there for as my in my aid, as my help, and I will be, so to speak, I'll be able to look down, stare down my enemies. He says, "Hashem, Hashainu Hashem yazer li be'elu shelifnim hemezim." God will help me from my helpers, from those who want to help me. God help me, save me from my friends, so to speak, because they are not friends. The Ma'am Lois quotes Rabbeinu Yosef Chiyun, who lived through the difficult times in which sages of Israel were forced to debate the representatives of other, at the time, extremely anti-Semitic faith systems. Famous example is Nachmanides, framed by lies and deceit. The conclusions were drawn before the arguments began. It wasn't a desire for the truth that fueled these convocations, but rather a desire to character assassinate and to harm Am Yisrael. That, my dear friends, is what David HaMelech is talking about. So what's the response? How do you deal with these lies? King David had some very interesting advice. King David said that once you realize what you're dealing with, you need to call it out straight away. Identify the lies. Ask the questions. Why are you lying? Why are you using deceit? There's a fascinating mimer. It's a mimer from the Alter Rebbe. It's found in what's called Memorim HaKtzorim. It's a book of short, pithy Hasidic teachings of the Alter Rebbe. Most of them are about half a page, some even as small as 7-8 lines. And the Alter Rebbe talks about two paradigms of evil. There's the Laban and there's the Esau. Two paradigms of evil. And he says, when Yaakov had to deal with Esau, it was fairly quick. But when he had to deal with Laban, who was the master of deception, there was a, till he worked things out, till he was able to wean himself, it took him 22 years. So the Alter Rebbe says, why did it take him so long for? He said, because Esau was open in his hatred towards Jacob. He lied to Yitzchak, not to Yaakov. To Yaakov, he was open. He knew exactly what he was dealing with. When it came to love on, Laban masqueraded as a loving father-in-law, when in fact, he was stabbing him in the back whenever he could. Until the duplicity was revealed, until the truth became apparent, until the reality was obvious, it took Yaakov a long time. And Alter Rebbe says that this is why the present exile is languishing for so long. It continues to just drag on. I mean, we believe that Mashiach is supposed to come. We believe that exiles are a temporary reality, remedial, corrective kind of circumstances. Okay, enough already. Daloi golos. Alter Rebbe says the problem is that this golos, it says, Harishayim shenizgalu kinizgalu avoinim nizgalu kitzam, the Gemara says. Gemara Masechet Yoma on page 9 says that the earlier sins of the Jewish people were overt and obvious and open. We knew what their sins were, and as such, there was a quick end to the galut, several decades. But he says, Doiros achreinim shaloi nizgalu avoinim, the later generations, you couldn't put your hand on it. You couldn't put your finger on what exactly was the evil. There's no end in sight. Incidentally, we're told that the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because of sinat chinam, because of wanton hatred. Wanton hatred means that you hate other people for no reason. So let me ask you a funny question. You dislike anybody? I dislike some people. I have good reasons, by the way. I think that everybody I dislike for the right reasons. That's what I think. It doesn't mean I'm right. I have my own jaded, narrow, silly little perspective. I'm probably very subjective and dishonest with myself, as we all are. Maybe I'm a little more. I'm sure there's some people you don't like. Tell a story. A rabbi is giving a sermon. He says, is there anybody in this room without any enemies whatsoever? Anybody in the room without any enemies? There's a hush in the congregation, and one old woman in her late 90s stands up and leans on her cane and says, I have no enemies. And the rabbi says, that's amazing, kol hakavod, phenomenal. Please tell the congregation, how did you achieve that? And she says, I outlived them all. You're supposed to laugh now. My point is that we all have people we dislike. We all believe for good reasons. Sinas chinam? I have no sinas chinam. I don't dislike anybody for no reason. I'll tell you why I dislike them. The thing is this. What came first, the chicken or the egg? Did the rationalizations for dislike come after the dislike because you just couldn't stand them? Or was that fair or square that you really didn't like somebody? Are you actually right about this? Did they actually do something wrong to you? Or is it just your own hubris and arrogance and self-importance, false self-importance? I'm not asking you, like, I'm asking myself. I'm like, this is a question we have to ask ourselves. So you're going to tell me, okay, in that case, how do we fix the problem? Because I don't know what the problem is. So the Rebbe says, that's why the answer to sinat chinam is ahavat chinam. We don't know if we hate people for the right reasons or wrong reasons. So love them for free. But he doesn't deserve my love. True, love him anyway. That's the only way we can, so to speak, push back against wanton or empty hatred is with unearned love. The only way to push back, because we're never going to know whether it's earned or not earned. No matter how many times you think about it and look at it, we're all clever enough to build sophisticated arguments in our own self-defense. So we have a sinas chinam golos, and it doesn't seem to have any end. And the Rebbe asks a question on this teaching of the Alter Rebbe. But the present golos is not the Labanite golos, it's called the Esavite golos. This is golos Edom, and Edom is Esav, is Esav. If Edom is Esav, then this golos should be very quick. And so the Rebbe explains that there are two Esavs. There's the Esav who faced off with Yaakov and tried to kill him very overtly. And then there's the next Esav, the Esav who loves you to death. The Esav who masquerades as a friend, but never misses a moment to stab you in the back when you're not looking. And the latter Esav is our biggest problem. And the lies and the deceit that's been leveled and hurled against us has been the source of so much suffering, of a profusion of persecution that is unequaled in any other corner of human anthropology. Anti-Semitism is not another xenophobia, another racism, another hate. It is a hatred, a pernicious hatred that stands, unfortunately, out and apart from all others. Far darker, far more insidious, far more evil, and far more capable of evading daylight and metamorphosing into the next form. It becomes a different looking hatred. It's portrayed differently. So whilst it's unpopular to be an anti-Semite, it's extremely popular to be anti-Israel. But it's the same hatred. Just has a different iteration, different strain that somehow evades the bleach, the disinfectant, the daylight, as it continues to metamorphose and tragically survive. That's what we're talking about here. And now that you understand what the problem is, David HaMelech's answer rings with such clarity. He says, "Ma yitin lecho, ma yesif loch loshen amir." What did the lies do for you? You're lying. For what purpose? What did you gain from it? On a literal level, the Medrash Tilim says, a person desires to steal. It's a bad desire. It's wrong. It's understandable. He profits. A person desires to commit an act of adultery. He fulfills his lust. A person desires to slander somebody. What do you gain from the slander? There's nothing to be gained. To understand and appreciate the deeper meaning of this question, my yitin lecho, my yesef, what is given to you and what is added to you from Lashon HaMiah, It's important to note that the Gemara itself expounds this very verse. The Gemara itself is found in Maseches Erchin, or Harochin. In Maseches Erchin, in the third chapter, on page 15, side B. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra. Rabbi Yochanan taught in the name of the great Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra, Maidich Siv, what is the meaning of what is written, Mayitin Lecha O Mayesif Lach Lashen Ramiya? Our verse. Amar Le'akodesh Baruch Hu L'Lashen. God proverbially says to the tongue, Kol Levarim Shal Adam Zkufim, all other limbs of a person are upright. Ve'ata Mutal. But you lie in horizontal fashion. Think about it. Your ears, your nose, your hands. Everything is vertical, so to speak. Up or hanging. So, and there's one part of the body that's horizontal, that just lies there. Kol levarim shel adam bichutz, all limbs of a person are on the surface. Va'ata mibefnim, and you are inside. Not only are you inside, I have surrounded you with two protective walls. Achas shel etzem, v'achas shel basar. One of bone and one of flesh. What has it done for you? The lies, the slander, the deceit, the gossip. What has it done for you? Rabbeinu Gershom says, one of bone and one of flesh. Shinayim, the teeth are bone. Sifsosayim, the lips are flesh. Now, that is to say, you have two guards, two levels of guardianship that seem to be reining your tongue in. So why do you lash out? The Mefarshim ask a question. And the question is, aren't the tongue and the lips part of the mouth? Aren't they part of the way we speak and articulate ourselves? So the Tzein Kadoshim answers in a very interesting way. He says, God could have created a person without lips and without teeth. And a tongue that could speak. The fact is that the tongue can't speak without its jaws or lips. But in theory, God could have created a tongue on the outside the way he created a nose on the outside. Why did he create the tongue in this fashion? As if to say to you, I give you two layers of protection from your tongue so that you won't speak words of gossip, slander, libel, and evil. Why don't you take note of what I did? I created you. See, the first thing that we need to orient ourselves into thinking is that we are not an accident. We didn't evolve by accident in random fashion. I for sure would have been a frog. I mean, I would never have become a human. I probably would have stayed a donkey, right? Why should I evolve into humanity? We believe that Hashem created every single species. If there was any evolution, it was choreographed, not random. But the Torah says, clearly, that Hashem created all of creation in its individual species. So far, the only actual evolution that's ever been documented has been found in Drosophilus. Yeah, that's forms of lettuce. They found links, they found iterations, but the missing links are missing, and Darwin himself said that if within a century they wouldn't find the missing links, he would consider his theory disproven. It's well over a century. The missing links haven't been found because it's not true. It's just not true. It's a scientific theory, which is an oxymoron, because strictly speaking, science means knowledge, and theory is postulation, not a fact. It's an intelligent sounding fact. It sounds scientific, but it is in fact not based on facts. It's based on dots, vague dots, that have been connected in very intelligent sounding ways, but there are huge gaps between the dots. So the first thing that we must orient ourselves into viewing the world and ourselves as created by Hashem. I can't argue with you. You don't want to believe that Hashem created the world. If you don't want to believe there's a creator, then this is a moot conversation. If there is no creator and everything is an accident, why is anything meaningful? We should be nihilists. Why does it make a difference if I'm nice or if I'm mean? What difference does it make if I murder or if I'm kind? What difference? It's all an accident anyway. You're just a collection of tissue. What difference does it make? It's all chemical. Well, we don't believe that. We believe that everything in the flesh has a soul or a spirit behind it, if you will, or beneath it. And that everything was created by God with a sacred purpose, including the structure of humankind's ability to articulate and to speak, which of course could mean to write just as well, or tweet, or post, or Instagram, or whatever it might be. You need language for these things, and invariably language is linked to the tongue or the mouth. So the Gemara is saying that we should take note of the fact that Hashem gave us the natural inhibitor to control the things we say. Who's David talking to? I mean, really, King David, I appreciate this lecture. To whom is this lecture being given? To the anti-Semites, to the wicked, to the evil? I think that this is the pshat. I think that people refuse to take responsibility for their misdeeds. At best, they call it a mistake, misguided, unintentional. David HaMelech's point is, it is not, so to speak, an unintended consequence. It's something you need to take responsibility for. The libels that were leveled against the Jewish people are arrows that were shot into a crowd. And even if the murderer doesn't know whose body was pierced by his arrow, he is still a murderer and still responsible. Random bullets fired don't make you less evil. Make you feel better. That kind of person doesn't want to kill somebody at blank range. He doesn't want to see his victim. He wants to feel good about himself. He wants to speak words that ring with such poetry, that sound so righteous, but drip with deceit. And in fact, ultimately, murderous intent. And tragically, successful time and again. Those are the political speeches and the sermons delivered by political and faith and social leaders that are laced with poison and aimed at the heart and soul of Israel and the Jewish people. Because nothing has changed. So, How do we answer to this? Call it out. Stop your lies. What do the lies achieve? You claim to want to protect innocent people. You claim to want to do good. So do good. Of what help is it to lie about things? How is anybody being aided or assisted? How are circumstances being bettered with evil, deceitful demonization? The answer, of course, is zero. So what are you doing it for? Stop telling lies. In other words, it seems to me David HaMelech is trying to a bright light on the lie. And make it clear that which you claim to wish to achieve, and as such are happy to use lies to achieve that goal, aren't accomplishing anything. Because the truth will set us all free, but lies will simply entangle. These lies, says David HaMelech, are chitzei giber shenunim. These lies are the arrows of the mighty that are sharpened. Im gachle resamim, with coals made of juniper. Or I've seen it translated as broomwood coals. Rashi tells us, Chitze Gimer Vaharei At Hoireges Bimkoim Rochoi Kechetz. These words that are spoken of in houses of government, on university campuses, in newsrooms, and on chats. Just words. Just words of demonization, just words of deceit, just words. Just words. But words have tremendous power attached to them. Those words have a life of their own, and they kill at great distance. In Gachli to summon with these coals of rotem wood, all other flaming material extinguished on the outside means extinguished on the inside. V'elu, but these of juniper, this unique kind of coal, kovu mibachutz, is extinguished on the outside. It looks so innocuous, so innocent, so good, so dangerous. But lay mi bifnim, they burn with hatred on the inside. They seem cool, indifferent, soothing, and yet ferociously hate-filled, burning with intensity. So this is the words that we speak of. The lies bring about murder and mayhem, literally. The Mitzudas David says, Chitze Gibor Doima Ata Lechitzim Shnunim. These are metaphorized or seem to be in the image of sharp arrows. Shabiyad HaGibor, they're in the hands of a mighty warrior. Shahire Gimohem. It is with these arrows, with these missiles, that he is able to kill at a great distance. Kain ata poi taimer lashon hara. You speak these words of slander and gossip. V'tahareg es ha'oimed mirochik. You incite a mob. You cause a murder far away. And you feel as if you haven't done anything. Gachale resomim, says the Mitzudas Siyan, de'ma'ateim im gecholo me'atzei roitim. These are like the coals of this rotem or juniper wood. Ki'im she'im nirin kvuyim, they seem to be extinguished mi'bachutz on the outside, bo'yarim he'ma mi'bifnim. They burn with intensity on the inside. And so too these words you speak, tedaber chalaklakos, you speak with such a smooth tongue. Ubeseser tedaber alav lashon hara. You sound so sophisticated. But really, it's just ugly old antisemitism. A burning hatred that disfigures you. So these words, my friends, are very dangerous. And they have been the source of our greatest suffering. The dispossession, the harm, and the murder of the Jewish people over the ages can tragically be traced back to sermons, to speeches, and to words that were spoken in seemingly innocent and even truthful settings. But they were libelous and deceitful. And they turned the missiles into arrows that harmed and killed, into coals that burned with intense hatred and devastating effects. The Medrash Tilim tells us a story in explaining what this rotem or juniper wood is. And it says that the Medrash Tilim tells us that these people had lit these coals in some Bedouin area, and they went away, and they came back an enormous amount of time later. One version of the Medrash is 12 months. And yet, the coals were still burning. It may be entirely metaphorical. Medrash often talks in metaphoric language. But nichvar ragleihem, their feet were burned from these very coals. Because they didn't extinguish sometimes the feet of the very person who lit those coals will be burnt. Sometimes the source of that very libel will come back to proverbially bite the originator. And so it is with the wicked, he says. This wicked is able to harm in a devastating way. Our rabbis talk to us about the difference between a sword and the difference between the arrows. And the difference is obvious, that you can unsheath a sword and you can choose to place it back in its scabbard. But once the arrows have left the bow, you no longer have control over them. And so it is with our words. I want to tell you an incredible story. And I want to lead that story back into you and me. Because for as easy as it is, or maybe not as easy, to speak about the truth of what's going on around us, it's difficult to speak about ourselves. But it's perhaps most important to focus inward. Let me do this in two stages. Several years ago, we had the privilege of being visited by the senior Rabbi Lau, former chief rabbi of Israel, child survivor of Buchenwald. And I spent a good deal of time with him. It was a very special couple of days. So one morning after davening, I was taking him back to his hotel. And lucky for me, there was traffic. It was the only time in my life I was happy to be stuck in traffic. And we talked for a long time. And he told me a story which I'll never forget. He said he was in Davos at the World Economic Forum. I think this was 1994. And there was an Israeli delegation and a Palestinian delegation, Arab delegation. And the Arab delegation is headed by Arafat, and the Israeli delegation is headed by Shimon Peres. And I don't remember the details, but somebody said there needs to be faith representation. So as the chief rabbi of Israel, he was there. And there was some mufti who was there as well on the Arab side. And he says, Yasser Arafat, Yimach Shemo, got up, and in his incoherent fashion, he began to rail against the Jewish people with lie after lie after lie. He said, they bombed the hospitals with children. They bombed them. They put acid. Children are dying, he said. They poison the ear. This is the part of our conversation I remember, because my blood was literally curdling listening to the words. Lie after lie after lie after lie. Demonization upon demonization. Libel after libel. Literally a reincarnation of the blood libels, the historic blood libels against the Jewish people. And then Rabbi Lau tells me that Shimon Peres gets up to speak. And he said, I thought we came for an engagement, and instead we have this attack, this disengagement. Let's focus on positivity. What was, was. Let's move forward. And he didn't answer anything. He didn't say those are lies. He didn't say, I'm shocked that a person would stand up and lie in public. And Rabbi Lau told me he noticed when Arafat was speaking, especially there was developing nations there, all the representation was like sitting and listening to the translation, they're shaking their heads in disbelief, and they're totally drinking the Kool-Aid. And he said it was just devastating. It was devastating. He said the Jews sitting there, literally, they couldn't even look up. It was so embarrassing. It was so bad, he said. He said to me that he felt he must pray. He felt he must pray. So apparently, the hotel they were staying at had once been, right after the Holocaust, had been a hostel for Holocaust survivors, and there was some kind of kosher kitchen that hadn't been used for decades, and now they were like using it. Somehow they found a book of Tehillim. And Rabbi Lau said to me, he took a book of Tehillim, and with a broken heart, he read the whole book. He read the whole book of Tehillim, praying to Hashem. And he said, since that day, I read the whole book of Tehillim every day. I was amazed. I said, you read the whole? He says, once, I missed once. That's the day when his older brother died. And he said that he was an onan, he couldn't recite Tillim. He said, I was amazed. He told me, he says, the whole Tillim every day since that day. So this is an amazing story. And, you know, it's the words of David HaMelech. But instead of using the Torah's response, Mayitin lecho, Mayesef lech, why are you lying? What are you saying lies for? Instead, he tragically, Shimon Peres spoke so foolishly, saying that let's look forward to the future as if giving credibility to the libel, to the lies. It was terrible. These are gibur, chitze gibur. These are arrows. These are things which later cause terrorist attacks and murders. Rabbi Lau's response was to daven because there was nobody to talk to. So listen to this incredible thing. The Chidah in his Sefer, Yosef Tehillah, says, if you want to understand this verse, go back to the previous verse. In the previous verse, David HaMelech says, Batzarasali, in distress, I cried out to you, Vana Yanini, you answered me. So in order to get Hashem's answer, Hashem Hatzila Nafshi, and the Chidah says, it says my soul, not my body. Now, Nafshi could of course mean my life, but Nafshi can also mean my soul. So the Chidah says, it may well be that what's being meant here is that Shomer Bris HaLoshen, the person who guards his tongue, the person who doesn't engage in slander, in libel, in exaggeration, in untruth. Who of us can say that we are like that? Who of us doesn't speak ill of a foe? Who of us doesn't like to libel or exaggerate something which an adversary said or did to make ourselves look good? The Chidah says, Shemer Bris HaLoshein, if you watch your tongue, Tfilosei Nishma'as, your prayers will be heard. And that's why he says, Bitzarasa korasi, I cried out in distress. Vayaneini. Do you know why Vayaneini? David HaMelech says, the secret to my prayers being answered was mitam sheshamarti bris haloshein, because I used my tongue for what was intended to be used. And that's why Hatzilo Nafshi. Hatzilo Nafshi, Hashem says, he says, save my soul. Sheeshmer todir bris haloshein, ensure that I always stay away from the slander and the libel. The Chidah says that there are two kinds of lies. There are the lies, and then there are the things that are perhaps true. Not all Lashon Hara is false. Bris HaLashon says, who asked you to be the spreader of that? Who asked you to speak about negativity? The Chidah says that about these very words, Rabbeinu Arizal said on the words Nagber Sfaseinu Nagber Al Shinayim, L'Shaneinu Nagber Al Shinayim, that our tongues overpowered our teeth. He says Sifseseinu Itanu. That's the reason that the Rabbeinu Arizal explains that we ask that Hashem save us from this kind of lie, so that our teeth should not be overpowered, meaning that our speech should actually be effective and meaningful. Our speech to Hashem. If you use your tongue for the right things when you speak to others, Hashem will enable your tongue to be effective in prayer. What a powerful idea. So yes, with our enemies, we have to shine a bright light. My dear friends, could you have had a more powerful lesson from David HaMelech? Do you know how we are saved time and again? Not because of our cunning, not because of our courage, not because of our military might, or because of our bravery. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we say in the Haggadah V'hishi Amda. That's what stands by for us, Hashem's promise. But Hashem's promise is actuated through our prayers. We're doing ourselves the greatest disservice when we render our prayers impotent by using our mouth for the wrong reasons. And the Arizal says that clearly. He says that's why our prayers aren't being effective. He cites Rabbeinu Moshe Alshich, who says that in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, one who spoke words of Lashon Hara, of slander and gossip, would find his skin discolored, the physical, the flesh disfigured. But he says, now it's Hatzila Nafshi. There's no tzaras, there's no discoloration in a visible way. But the soul is being tattooed, so to speak. The soul is being stained. The soul is being soiled. The soul is being disfigured. And as such, the soul is unable to do and perform its function and its duty. The Chidah cites Rabbeinu Yosef Ibn Goya, who says that there is a fascinating discussion in the Talmud Yerushalmi. In the Talmud Yerushalmi, it says that the tongue, so to speak, asked, it's found, this Yerushalmi is found in Brachas, in the first chapter, the second halacha. Reb Shimon ben Yochai said, I thought that if I had been present at Har Sinai, I would have asked God for two mouths, one mouth to speak words of Torah, and the other mouth to use for mundane or pedestrian purposes. But Reb Shimon ben Yochai said, I reconsidered because I reasoned that the mouth I possess, Reb Shimon ben Yochai said, has already been polluted with slander, with gossip. He said, if I would have two mouths, it would be that much worse. So Rabbi Yosef Ibn Goya, quoting this Yerushalmi, says, that's exactly the meaning of David HaMelech, my Yosef Loch. My Yosef, what is being added because of all this? You're only losing. All of your slander and gossip is harming you in the end. We harm ourselves, my friend. He says, if we would have had two mouths, we would simply harm ourselves twice as much. And so in the quest to better ourselves, what we're really being told, my friends, is that we need to use our words wisely. In Lakuta Sichas, in Chilek Hei, a fascinating rumination, edit rumination, on why the Torah finds it important to speak about Noach in glowing terms. The Rebbe develops this idea based on the Gemara and Arachin, the very same page we cited earlier. The Gemara says, L'shoyin klisoy, kotl klisoy. The triplicate language harms all three. And the literal meaning is the Lashon Hara harms the speaker of the slander, the listener, and the subject being spoken of. And the Rebbe says, how does it harm the one being spoken of? So actually, the Medrash Tilim says this is the story of a very bad name named Doeg, and Doeg HaAdomi, who sought to score points with King Saul, slanders other individuals, a man named Achimelech, was a Kohen, as having provided support and salvation for King David and rebelling against the king. And in the end, Doeg dies, Achimelech and his brothers and Nov are killed. Shaul dies too, all because of that slander. One Sid lent to the next. But here, the Rebbe says something amazing. When you speak badly of somebody, you actually bring forth those qualities. That there's a mystical power attached to speech. That mystical power is able to negatively impact somebody when you use your words in a bad way. And the inspirational thing, the Rebbe says, Meruba Mida Toiva. When we talk about something positive, it's ever so much more so. So use your words wisely. Understand the power that Hashem has given you. He gave you a tongue, and he put in front of it a set of teeth and lips to remind you to guard your tongue, to be careful with your speech. Know that your words are powerful. They can become a hail of murderous arrows, or they can bring forth life-elixing salvation. The choice is ours. There is so much lying, deceit, so many libels, so much gossip and slander against the Jewish people. We really need Hashem's help. We should call out the haters. We should shine a bright light of truth at the liars. As the Rebbe famously told Prime Minister Netanyahu, when he was the Israeli envoy to the United Nations, you serve in a house of lies. The Rebbe said, light a candle of truth, its light will be seen from afar. Expose the lies. Don't engage, don't lock horns, just expose lies for what they are. The lies have to be exposed. But my friends, for us to be able to prosper, we were given a great gift. And that's the gift of our mouths. The proverbial idea of Hayidayim Yidei Esav, the hands, violence belongs to Esav, but for us, the Jewish people, Hakol, the voice is Yaakov's. With our prayer, with our words, we can bring forth goodness from God and from people. And Chas V'Shalom, when we don't, we render ourselves impotent and expose ourselves to the harmful effects of the lies and the slander. And this, my friends, is some of what David HaMelech teaches us in Kapitel Kufchav, in these next verses, verses 2, 3, and 4 of the first of the Shir HaMa'alot. I'll be back and we will continue. Thank you so much for joining. Have a beautiful day.